Hey everyone, it's Crystal. Welcome back to the Life Aligned Podcast, where I give you the tools you need to live a life of purpose. Today is the second episode in my Month of the Dead, Mes de los Muertos series for October. So all of October, I will be focusing on topics that have to do with the dead or our ancestors. So the first episode, if you caught it last week, I gave you a very broad outline, a general template for setting up an ancestor altar, if that is something you feel led to incorporate in your own spiritual practice. Today, I am going to be talking to Narinder Bazin, who is a death midwife. As our society has industrialized and mechanized most life processes, death has been one of those life processes that has been mechanized, commercialized, and just really removed from the people who are actually experiencing death. And that would be the person who is dying and the loved ones they leave behind. And through that process, through that detachment that we've experienced over time as a society, to put it simply, we've forgotten how to die. And the processes, the cues, the signals, the changes that occur as someone is dying. Now, when I mean someone is dying, I mean either of age or a terminal illness. I'm not talking about a sudden or traumatic death. But when someone is going through the dying process, this can be a time for loved ones to really come together and enjoy the final moments that they have with the person who is dying. The process for the person who is dying can be rather peaceful and calm in their transition into the next life, the afterlife, can be a calm and peaceful process. But I think that there is so much fear built up around death. There is so much that we have forgotten about death because, again, most of us are so removed and so detached from this process, and a lot of it does have to do with that fear, that we don't really understand that it becomes this thing that we want to avoid at all costs. So my guest today is going to share a little bit about what she does in helping people reconnect and reclaim the dying process. The Life Aligned Podcast is a one-woman production, and this is my way of contributing to raising the collective vibration. And there are a couple of ways you can help me do that and support this show and get it out to a wider audience. The first thing you can do is to leave a review in Apple Podcasts, if that is where you're listening to the show. Now, what that does is just to, like I said, help the show reach a wider audience. So I actually want to read one of the reviews that I have gotten recently in Apple, and that is from SBS 2020. SBS 2020 says, "Powerful. This is what's needed in today's society. A word of power and truth that is applicable. Thank you." Thank you, SBS 2020, for listening to the show. I really appreciate the support, and I appreciate the review. Now, if Apple is not your thing, then there are a couple of other ways that you can support the show as well. You can subscribe wherever you're listening to this, if whether it's Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you are listening to the show, whatever your favorite streaming app is, because I'm on pretty much all of them, just click the subscribe button, and that way you'll never miss an episode, and it just helps other people to find me. You can also head over to the show website, lifealignedpodcast.com, and purchase show merch. So we've got t-shirts, mugs, masks, a whole slew of show merchandise that you can purchase to show your support and stay warm and cozy if you get a hoodie this winter season. Hi, Narinder, how are you?
I'm good. Hi, Crystal. How are you today?
I am wonderful and very excited to get into this topic because I think it's one that's new to me, or at least it was until I was introduced to your work, but I think it is amazing and much needed, particularly in this climate that we're in. So I am going to let you introduce yourself and let people know what it is you do.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this. Thank you for the platform to get to talk about this work. So I am a deaf midwife, and that's how we met, actually, because I led an online class and through that program, and you came to that, and so that's how we met. Yeah. I'm a deaf midwife. I'm a home funeral guide. That's funerals in your home. A home funeral guide, yes. An intuitive counselor, a mystic, just... Yeah, so I think today we're talking about the deaf midwifery.
We are.
Yeah.
So now the in-home funeral guide, now that is interesting. And it's one of those things where today we have become so disconnected from life processes in general, from birth through death. So a lot of these processes, these cycles that used to occur in the home, which were natural to occur in the home, are so foreign to us now. Like when you said in-home funeral guide, like I'm thinking the image that came to mind was the movie My Girl, when Macaulay Culkin died, like the funeral was in the house, and that was how things were done at that time. But now, not so much. So how does, like, what exactly do you do today? Like, do people still have funerals at home?
Well, I'll give you a little bit of a background on the funeral industry in the United States. So deaf midwives have been around since the dawn of time. It's a little bit of gender stereotyping here, but normally in a community, there was that woman that would come to the family's home and serve them as their loved one was passing. They were called shrouding women. They would, so they would be there during the passing. Then they would help to wash and dress the body and lay the body out in the living room and, you know, just be with the family during that time. The caskets were made by either someone in the family or you would hire a cabinet maker.
Okay.
Yeah, so you would hire a cabinet maker or someone in your family would put together a simple casket, and the body would be, you know, laying in vigil for 2 to 3 days at home and then put into the casket. The family would dig the grave, either at the church or on the family property, would dig the grave, would bury the casket, would cover the casket, you know, with dirt, would, would do the whole thing. It was all a family affair.
Right.
And this is how it was since the dawn of time. You know, different, we're not talking about funeral customs in the world. I'm just talking about in America.
Right.
Right. So, you know, just, so that's how it was. And, you know, I think about this often. I think about when death was at home like that, the children and the family were running around, coming in and out to play, running to the kitchen, kissing grandma's hand as she's passing, going out to look, seeing a dead body. The children were seeing a dead body. There was no shock to the psyche for children and death. So we used to just grow up with, it's just a very natural thing that happens. There wasn't a lot of fear around it. I mean, there's a normal, healthy fear of death, obviously. We have right. that in place, so we want to stay alive and survive.
The goal is to survive.
The goal is to survive, right, yeah. But, I mean, if you think about that, think about, like, the children never had, you know, there was never a point in their later youth where they learned what death was and became terrified of it. It was always a thing. So that's how it was. And then around the time of the late 1800s, after the Civil War, well, this is how I tell the story. So okay. let's say the undertaker, you know, the cabinet makers were like, hey, wait a minute. This is like a thing. And they were the first undertakers. So the ones that were making the caskets began to have what we now call a funeral home. So they would open a funeral home. And I've seen like old advertisements for the first funeral homes. And one, the slogan just stuck in my brain forever. And it was, we will remove the sadness from your home.
Wow.
Yes, another one said that this work was too heavy and too messy for women.
So, it sounds like another industry in which a similar trajectory.
I'm just letting you, you know, fill in the blanks. And so that's how we have the modern funeral. It turned into a business. It turned into an industry. That's only 5 and 6 generations ago.
This is exactly what happened with birth midwifery, with, you know, whole midwives that this whole process of pregnancy, of birth, was something that bonded women together. This was a process that you went through with the women in your family, in your community. And, you know, when men saw a way to make a dollar off of it, now we need board certified OBGYNs and
yes.
that whole other episode. But back to this death process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you think about it, it's just relatively new in the grand scheme of time. This has just been a blip. And, you know, this is like a little side street to the story, is that the modern funeral that we have, the modern, you know, the casket and then the modern burial that you see, the American standard cemetery, that mm-hmm. whole process is horrible for the environment.
I always wonder, like when I pass funeral, not funeral homes, graveyards, mm-hmm. like clearly at some point we're going to run out of land and places to bury people, no?
Yes, right. That's correct. Yes. Yeah. I mean, in European countries, they're stacking them on top of each other. Or you're in your grave site for so many years and then you're dug up and it's like, so yes, it's the taking up space, but it's also the amount of resources that we put into, and I'm gonna pull up I know this is a recorded podcast, but I wanna pull this up real quick because I wanna just say this. This is what we're burying every year. We're burying 30 million feet of hardwoods.
Mm.
We're burying 2,700 tons of copper, 100,000 tons of steel, and almost 2 million tons of concrete. This is what we're burying every year.
Wow.
Yes.
The concrete alone is like, oh my gosh.
yes. So, right? Look at all of that just going into the ground. And if you think about it, that's also what going into the ground.
Yeah. Money. It could be the average funerals. I know years ago, and I don't know how much has changed, but I think it's like 20,000, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty posh funeral, you know, standard, you know, like posh funeral. I mean, you know, you can get them for like $10,000. Yeah, the average price in Georgia is about $12,000.
Which is still like crazy. And then you have, you know, all these like, again, this is a conflation of a couple of things with people like doing GoFundMes or these online fundraisers to bury people, to bury their loved ones. It's crazy. And I mean, you know, we could have the conversation about, you know, preparing your finances and having all that stuff in order so that your loved ones don't have to go through this. But even if you do your planning, you're still putting aside a good chunk of money to bury yourself.
Yes. And all of the things that go, all of the things that are absolutely unnecessary. So thank you for this platform, Crystal, because here I get to share with whoever's listening to your podcast that embalming is absolutely unnecessary. Embalming a body is absolutely unnecessary unless the body is going to be on a really, you know, a really long wake or a really long funeral. Some Catholic sects, they have like a 2-week thing there they would need to embalm. Or let's say grandmother dies in Missouri, but her body is buried in New York, then she would be embalmed because the body is being transferred. But other than that, it's all about the money. And I'm so sorry to say that to the funeral director friends that I have, but it's true. So embalming is unnecessary. Okay. Then you've got this, the casket vault, or sorry, the casket's vault, you know, the cement thing that goes in the ground, and they're sold to families because they're telling the families that this is going to preserve the body forever.
Right.
What lasts forever?
Now, which that for me is like another point, because me, my thing is, I don't want to, like, I believe in the whole natural circle of life, you know, and I just try to live my life as healthfully, as naturally as possible. So like, bury me in a tree. Like, I've seen these tree pod burial options. Like, that's what I want. Put me in the bottom of the tree, put me in the ground, and let me go back and fertilize something new.
Yes, absolutely. And that's so beautiful. Yes, that's exactly what it is. That's the beauty. That's the reincarnation. So just so you know, here's the good news. This is becoming known. More people are hearing about this. More people are like, wait a minute, I don't have to do all of that. So green burials or green burial cemeteries are popping up all over. I'm sure there's one there where you are. And also, some of these standard cemeteries are starting to feel the pressure and starting to think about and maybe transition a part of their property into green burial.
So, right. Because, I mean, really, what is the usefulness of preserving a body forever? I mean, yes, like you said, and I'm Jamaican, so our funerals, the whole process, you know, we're all scattered across the globe. So yeah, no, my family members listening, we're going to need to be embalmed. But, but once the service has taken place, and you're in the ground, I mean, my great-great-great-great-grandchildren are not going to dig me up to see me. So why do I need to be so freshly preserved? Why does my casket need to be in concrete so that the worms don't get to me? Who the hell is going to know?
All right. So the answer I'm going to get, all right, it's an excellent question. And the answer I'm going to give you is a little bit of a hard bump, all right? So I worked at a green burial cemetery, and the head steward of the cemetery said it this way. He said, when you look at an American cemetery and you see that that lawn is flat, you roll that sod back, it's a parking lot. It's all the cement vaults. Basically, you roll the sod back and you're just going to see some. It's a parking lot. The reason why they have to do that, this is what he's saying, and it's true. If you think about it, it's just true, is so that they can mow the lawn. Because if you bury a body in the ground without a vault, you're going to have these dips.
Oh, the valleys.
Yes, yeah. So that's
what I'll say about that. That is crazy.
A little mind-blowing here, right? Yes, yeah, so that's burial. That's my little spiel on burial.
Okay, so now that we've gotten the business out the way, now we know about how and why the burial process, the funeral process is the way it is, at least here in America. Mm-hmm. And I think at this point with the globalization of our world, and I think many funeral customs at this point are very similar. Like you mentioned, in Europe, people are stacking their bodies. Like, it's very similar across the world, I think. Mm-hmm. Would that be inaccurate? I mean, I think there, you know, obviously there are cultural differences here and there, but, and maybe this is just my self-centered worldview, but I think, but, you know, because I just think of, like, what, even when you see movies and stuff, like, there are different, like, in Asia, they have different customs, but I think at the end of the day, at least now in 2020, the way we handle our dead, the way we bury people, is very similar worldwide.
Yes. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. It's either, you know, buried in the ground, buried in a mausoleum, or cremated. Yes. Right. I mean, that's pretty much what you do. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's how we do things for the most part in 2020. Yeah. But you also mentioned your role as a death midwife, which is more, I would think, along the spiritual, the social aspect of death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, death midwifery to me is, it's like, yeah, it's the emotional, spiritual support around the whole pan-death experience, around the entire thing. And I like to talk about death midwifery through storytelling. So if I can, I'll tell you a story. Absolutely. I'll tell you a couple stories.
We love stories.
Good. So I'll tell you a couple stories about my death midwifery and what it looks like.
Are you mentally, physically, and emotionally drained? Are you financially stable, but feelings of abundance in one or more major life areas is missing? Are you stuck, but you're not sure what to do or where to go? Do you need freedom and vitality? Do you crave a deep sense of connection with a life partner? If you feel a sense of lack in any area of your life and you're ready to enjoy the unlimited abundance you know is available to you, I can help you create the life you truly desire. Together, we'll uncover your core limiting beliefs so that your full potential is unlocked. These blocks can be detrimental to your growth and must be rooted out prior to attracting abundance. You will learn how to get in and stay in your zone of abundance so that the situations you desire flow to you effortlessly and easily. Using my unique blend of tarot and other divination tools, we'll address the internal and external factors that are keeping you out of your zone of abundance. I'll teach you how to recognize and follow the signs that let you know you're on the right path. Getting to the root of unconscious fears can be uncomfortable, so it's important to have someone who can help you through the difficult challenges that can arise. I will guide you through the pain so that you are fully open to receiving unlimited universal abundance and living your life's purpose. If you're ready to step into your abundance today, schedule your free consultation at lifecrystallized.com.
So Well, let's go with Miss Thelma. Miss Thelma, she just left her body on June 28th, I believe, June 28th. A few months before her passing, her daughters gave me a call and they said, Mom is at home on hospice.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that hospice was here for a lot more than what they are.
So that was actually going to be a question.
Okay.
How is that, which I guess you're about to answer, but my question is, how is a deaf midwife different from a hospice nurse?
Right. Okay. So I get that a lot. I get that question probably more than anything. It's like, oh, you're like hospice? Well, not really. I mean, the thing is, you know, deaf, but no. So deaf midwives work alongside hospice nurses. We don't duplicate what they do. And every time I have met a hospice nurse when I've been working, they will say to me, oh my God, who are you? We need more of you, please.
Wow.
Yes. So hospices, on average, are with a family 2.5 hours a week.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. That's not a lot of time.
No, right. So that's visits from the social worker, the nurses, the CNAs, the chaplain. That's all of those.
All
people
of them. For
yes.
2.5 hours.
For two and a half. Yeah. So that's like in and out visits. So, and this is when people are at home. We're talking about people at home on hospice, mm-hmm. which is the majority of hospice. Like,
right. I think that is one thing that people typically want in both the beginning and the end. Like, people want to be comfortable in their homes for as long as they can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So hospice only comes for that amount of time. And so who is then in charge of taking care of their loved ones? So Thelma's daughters are now, they're in charge of taking care of their mother's care 24 hours a day, mm-hmm. 7 days a week. They could pay, and they did, someone out of pocket, a nurse, that you can pay a nurse out of pocket mm-hmm. to come be a sitter. It's called sitter services, to come sit with their mother for, you know, so many hours a day, right? And that's more like a nurse. So there's all of this pressure for feeding your loved one, bathing your loved one, mm-hmm. keeping their space, you know, all of their medications. That's all on the family. And I think a lot of people in our country don't know that.
Right.
Yeah.
And it again, because we compartmentalize our lives and all the facets of our lives. So that care, you know, that's when things get in. This is a whole other issue I have with just the construct of our society. We weren't meant to live and function in isolation. Like, the nuclear family is not the best setup for, and this is one of those reasons why, because mm-hmm. at the end of life, when you have two adults who are working, even if they're empty nesters and their children are out of the house, they're still typically working. So how do you hold down a full-time job and then give your parents the care that they need in their final days and years?
Yes.
It's a lot. So then you ship them off to nursing homes, which is a mess, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you need, like, those are your options. Either you are juggling a full-time job and 24-hour care for your loved one at the end of their life, or you're shipping mm-hmm. them off to a nursing home or having someone come in that mm-hmm. can do that, because this is the care that this person needs.
Yes, that's absolutely right. So I'll take a pause from my story with Miss Thelma and say that my own dad lives in a care home 4 miles from my house. And because he has mid to late stage Alzheimer's
mm-hmm.
and it's just me, I'm his only caregiver. There's no way in the world, just like what you're saying, there's no way in the world that I could work and take care of my dad, who falls who needs 24-hour supervision.
Right.
So he's actually in a care home that is gorgeous and lovely, and I'm in close contact with the nurses and directors there. It's the best scenario for him.
Right.
It's just unfortunate right now because we who have loved ones in care homes can't go to see them because of COVID. Yes.
Exactly.
So that's really hard. So back to hospice back to Miss Thelma and that family. So they invited me out. So this is what it typically looks like. So I'll come out and I first meet with them. I don't go in and meet their mother immediately. Mm-hmm. I first go in and I sit down and talk with them. You can feel in my presence that I'm bringing a different type of awareness. I'm not walking in with a clipboard. I don't have scrubs on. I don't have forms to fill out. I'm simply showing up and having a cup of tea with you and talking to you about mom. Right. And you as caregiver and what's all going on and how's she feeling. And then we create this relationship. And then I went and I go meet their loved one. And I went in and I met Miss Thelma. And she was at that point not communicative so much anymore.
Okay.
And so I just sit with her quietly. And I am a mystic. I'm an intuitive. And I can speak with people when they are not able to speak. Not 100% of the time, because not everybody wants to speak.
Right. Right.
Yes. But I'm able to read the subtle body energies. I'm able to do that. So I sit with her, I play her music, I rub her hand, I give her a little foot, like a super gentle foot massage. I help the family to curate a room that feels like a nursery, like a sacred space.
I love that analogy.
Yes. Yeah. So how can we change the lighting over here? How can we move the television over there so it's not so, the light's not so mm-hmm. blaring? What kind of music can we play? Can we put on a mister, like a, for a fragrance in the room, like mm-hmm. lavender or something? So I help them to create this sacred nursery for the great sleep, which mm-hmm. is essentially what is happening,
right?
Like falling asleep. Yeah. So I make these weekly visits and I go see them, over the course of our time together. I make these weekly visits. And in between that time, in between my visits, they're on my radar. So they can send me text messages, they can mm-hmm. call me at any time. As soon as I'm with a family, I'm with a family.
Right.
So I'm available to them all the time. And then as I start to see the progression of the dying and I'm starting mm-hmm. to witness subtle signs and see hospice nurses can't tell you, we predict this or we predict that. I will. I'll say I'm sensing this. I'm sensing she is no longer in the lower part of her body. Her spirit is rising to the mm-hmm. top of her body. She's preparing to leave.
Right.
And I'll be able to help them understand what, mom's having visions of things and she's talking, she's calling out different names and I can help them to understand what she's seeing. She's not just hallucinating. I'm sorry. She's speaking to those who passed before her.
Right. Because she's getting closer to that side.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And so I'm there for all of those things. And like I said, as it moves closer to the time of her act of dying, then I'm coming more often, just like the birth midwife.
Mm-hmm.
The birth,
yes, yes. Makes sense. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the birth midwife is, she's coming more often.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing.
Like monthly checkups. Yes. To by the time you're ready to deliver, it's at least once a week.
Yes.
Which, yours is, you start out with once a week and then, like you said, as you get closer, you come more often.
Yes. Yes. So. So then let's say it's, I can see that this is it. We're down to days now. So then I'm on call 24 hours a day. I keep my phone on, my phone's next to me. And lo and behold, I get the text message at 9:00. Mom's breathing has changed. Can you please come?
Right.
Yes.
So now we're in labor.
Now we're in labor. That's exactly right, Crystal. Yes, mom's breathing has changed. Can you please come? Absolutely, I'll be there in 30 minutes. So then I show up and I'm able to hold this calm, safe, sacred space around a time that is sometimes, more than not actually, for families, scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, hospice isn't there when your loved one dies.
Right.
You there.
Yep.
And if you've never seen a death before, you're learning in real time.
Yes.
Yeah. So what happens a lot of times, Crystal, people freak out and they'll call 911. Really? And then you've got, yes, and then you've got this elderly person who's trying to die.
And they're trying to save her.
And they're doing all of that. Yeah, so we don't want that.
Yeah.
So I'm there to hold that sacred, safe, calm space. I'm not all up in their business. I'm standing back. I'm standing back here, and I'm available at any second, you know, when they need me. So they're, you know, things are changing. So I'm there all through the night so they can go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Because now we're on like a every minute watch with her.
Right.
Yeah. So if anything changes, I'm waking you up so you can come be with your mother. So.
And I will say that process, because when my grandmother passed, she was in hospice, and hospice called and was like, you know, she's not doing well. And we were able to be there. So, I mean, even when we got down, she was in Florida, we were in New York. And when we got down there, she fought at the end. You know, it was funny because it was one of those things where, like, she had been dying for 20 years. It was like every birthday, like, oh, this is probably my last one.
She's one of those. Yeah.
Yes. So then when we get the call that, you know, she's not doing well, it was like we fully expected it to be like a day or two. No, this woman hung on for another like 2 weeks. But we got to really spend time with her, like that time going to see her and talk to her. Mm-hmm. And the day she passed, someone had gotten a call and they were like, you need to come. And by the time we got the message, like, there was still a little bit of a gap, but she waited. And my mom and I got there. My son was not even a year old at the time. And we got there. And he had always, like, in the time that we had been going to see her, like, he would love to, like, climb in the bed with her. And, like, you know, clearly they had some kind of connection, even though, as you said, like, she wasn't speaking. But he was so fussy that day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the room. Like, as soon as we get in there, he's like, fussy. And my mom and I were with her, and she knew that we were there. And I'm like, okay, you know, the baby's like really cranky, so I'm gonna take him out. And I like did a loop around the hallway, and by the time I came back, my mom's like, you know, she's gone. Like, she took her last breath before we left the room. I didn't realize it at the time, but it really, like, it was a beautiful experience to know that she was conscious enough of what was happening to wait until we got there. Mm-hmm. And that we were able to be there with her, holding her hand, letting her know that we were there. And it was a very peaceful transition. And of course, as soon as we got back into the room, like, my son was fine again. He was calm and, you know, mm-hmm. So like that process, that experience is something that I will always really, really treasure. I'm so grateful that I had it, because, and I had this experience before I was, like, at this point, obviously, my spiritual journey. So I didn't really have all the understanding that I do now. Mm-hmm. But even then, I was able to really treasure and understand and really accept that gift for what mm-hmm. it was. So mm-hmm. I mean, when you talk about your experience and what you do, like, if more people knew and understood this process and how beautiful it could be, for the person who is transitioning, and really for even the loved ones that are left behind, like to be able to have those moments and not have paramedics in there trying to revive and doing the paddles, and like that is a lot. That energy, that experience, seeing that scene is like chaotic, and it's not the comforting end that we all hope for, you know?
Right. Yes. Yeah. So your grandmother gave you a gift.
Yes.
And a part of me is like, well, did she need them there because she needed their comfort, or did she need them there because she wanted to show them?
I think, yes, and absolutely. I feel that she waited for us. Like, you know, we would have been devastated, absolutely, to have gotten there after, you know?
Yeah. So why do you think your son was fussy?
I think he sensed what was happening. Absolutely. Like, even it, like, I instantly knew, like, when I came back and my mom was like, she was going, I'm like, oh, well, that's why. And I think he just, he sensed it. He knew. And it might not have been that he was necessarily, but like, you know, he was, like I said, he wasn't even a year old at the time. So he was not speaking, but he was clearly communicating in the only way that he knew how to. So it might not have even been that he was fussy or cranky. Like, he might not have been upset, but he was communicating and in the way he knew how. Which I perceived at the time as him being upset, but I'm sure he wasn't, like, you know, because he probably knew exactly what was happening.
Wow. Yeah, I was a nanny for 20 years. So I know infants and toddlers really, really well. And I know, yes, I know how they can sense things we can't. And the way you just said that is so cool, that he was communicating in the only way that he knew how. And it's interesting, because when you were saying that, I was like, I'm not saying that this is what happened. I'm just, I had this question in my head of like, was he sensing her trying to leave her body?
Right.
You know, like, let me out of here.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm trying to get out of here. Yes. Yes. So, wow. I love that story.
But back to Miss Thelma.
So then the time comes where, you know, the last night, they called me at about 8 p.m. and they said her breathing has changed dramatically.
Right.
You know, I had been there for two nights overnight.
Okay.
So I'll work overnight and rest during the day, but I'd been there for two nights overnight, and then but then they said, yeah, her breathing has changed dramatically. Can you come? And so I went, and about 45 minutes after I was there, I was sitting in the living room with one of the daughters, and the other daughter was out on the porch. So Thelma was by herself but just in the other room, not, you know, it's not like down a hall or anything, just a wall separating us. She was in like they made a room for her in what was the front living room. And we were sitting in the family room and just having a conversation, quiet. Everything was super quiet, super calm, very sleepy. It was about 9:45 or so at night. And I heard in my voice someone say, now.
Wow.
And they said it in such a, like a get up and go.
Right.
So I didn't say anything, but I stood up and I went in there and I looked at her and I could tell, oh, we've got 2 minutes left. She's really there.
Mm-hmm.
So I gathered the daughters, and it's time, and brought them in. And this happens often, could help them feel safe. And what, you know, mom's body is making noises, you know, the rattling that happens in the throat. Mom's body is making those noises. Because she's not in her body by this point. You know, she's her spirit's already leaving the body.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm able to just be there to say, like, your mother is, she's doing this beautifully. This is perfect.
Right.
She's doing this beautifully when they're afraid. You know, is she hurting? What's happening? You know, like this, it's not this big dramatic thing. It's just, there's some scary noises that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And so I love that part. I love that I can be there as this strong presence that's quiet and in the back, but the strong presence that lets them feel safe so that they can open up to what's happening, so that they can be super present and feel safe as much as they can with their mother, and to witness the spirit leaving the body, witness their mother's last breaths.
And that is one of your gifts, is really being able to bring that comfort to the living, to those on this side. Because as you mentioned, we met through a workshop you did.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know what to expect. It was something that interested me. I think, I don't even remember the title. Like, I know it had something to do with kind of connecting with loved ones on the other side.
Yeah.
So, but the way you opened that workshop with your meditation was one of the most calming guided meditations I have ever experienced. And it was totally unexpected, again, because of the content, the topic of the workshop, but the way you are able to connect with spirit, with the spirit in us, with, you know, just that energy and your soothing presence, even virtually through Zoom, is just, it's amazing. It really is a gift that you have.
You're going to make me cry. Yeah, so it's funny. I don't walk around feeling like I'm this calming presence. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I am told that more than anything. So I think I don't necessarily attribute it all to me. I think that I think that there are angels of death. I don't think I know. There are two angels of death that are with me at all times. Their presence is, they don't communicate, they don't talk, they don't move. They're like pillars. They're massive, massive pillars. And I think that I just have to show up. And they bring that energy into the room. I do know I have a soothing voice. I've been told that. I do know I have a soothing voice, and I channel that meditation we did, or I channel the meditations. Those are not of me, they're through me. So my gift is actually I'm able to empty myself.
And that is such, like, your description of the two pillars, angels of death, is like, it's a beautiful description. Because again, when we think about the quote unquote angel of death, the Grim Reaper, it's this big, scary figure that, you know, comes in and just swoops you like in the middle of dinner or something.
Yeah.
But really, that imagery, that construct of the angels of death is like, it really is so beautiful and calming and soothing, because like you said, the issue, the scariness of death really is for those of us who are here, not for the person experiencing it. And I think if we shift the way we perceive it, if we shift our understanding of this process, which is another part of what makes death so scary to us, is that we see it as an end. Like, death is an end. But if we understand that it's a process, it's a transition, it is moving on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always say, like, for me, the easiest way to explain it is like, energy can't be created or destroyed, right?
Absolutely.
So even scientifically, like, if you don't believe a word coming out of our mouths right now, you know, if death, angels of death are something like foreign and crazy and unreal to you, look at the science. Energy can't be created or destroyed. So when we die in this world, we have to go somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. Our subtle body, our essence. Yes, absolutely. And my beliefs are not formed on, they're not, this isn't something my beliefs are from experience. So many people, they read about mystical experiences. You know, you can study them out the wazoo. You know, you can read all of the metaphysical books you want to read.
Right.
But none of that means anything if you've not actually had the experiences. And when you have these experiences, it just, there's another part of your brain that's working. So I'm saying that because I don't know what the hell happens after someone dies. I don't. I have no clue. I've never died. I don't know what that moment's like. I don't know what happens after someone dies. I have no clue. But I will say this. We don't die alone. You can ask hospice nurses. You can ask neurosurgeons.
Yes.
They'll all tell you that people are calling out to dead people before they die.
Yes.
They're making statements that are maybe metaphors, but they're about, you know, I got to catch the bus. Can you open the window? I got to get out of here. I need my shoes. They're making statements because they know they're about to leave.
Wow.
Yes. But what I say all the time in my presentations and stuff is what I do is not the neurosurgeon's job. This is not the nurse's job. This is not the social worker's job,
right?
To talk about these things. So they don't do that. They do their job. And this is my job to talk about these things. So I know for a fact we don't die alone. I know for a fact we don't die alone. Your ancestors, those you have lost in your life, are there. I don't understand how, but they're there. And also, after someone has left their body, they're still able to communicate. I had a call a couple weeks ago with a client. I've never met her before. She called me for intuitive counseling. Never met her before. She had lost a parent suddenly. And within a couple weeks of our call, the details that came in about their parent, there's nowhere in the world I would have gotten those details.
Right.
Right? So her parent is communicating. And I believe the reason why she called me was that I could help translate.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is, I mean, another aspect of what you do is, are those intuitive readings and that communication, not only helping people that are in the process of dying, transition, but then after they have transitioned, when they're on the other side, is that you are able to communicate and deliver those messages that their loved ones are, for whatever reason, not understanding, not paying attention to, and really to continue to comfort them as they continue to deal with the grief of that loss.
Yes. Yeah. A question I get that shocked me when I started doing this, I get often, is where are they? Are they safe? That's so sad. You know what I mean? Like, that your loved one died I'm like, oh my God, yes, let me be here for you in those questions. Because they were here 1 minute and now they're gone. Or where are they? Are they okay? You know? Yeah.
So you also have a program that you use to help other people do this important work.
Yes, I do. I felt the calling several years ago to create a program for people like myself. And so I created a deaf midwifery training program. And I just put it out there and let people take the course. And then in this past, summer, I started hearing that I needed to redo it. I needed to rewrite it and make it a little more intimate.
Okay.
So, Yeah, and so I have this apprenticeship where I invite four people maximum to do their death midwifery journey with me. And it's called Nine Keys, nine the number, and then keys, like you unlock the door, the nine keys. And so we have eight keys where it's 8 months of study, and then your ninth key is an initiation into the lineage of midwifery. And everybody who goes through my courses leaves feeling very confident in what they're about to present into the world on the magical and the mundane. You know, they feel confident. And then I am available to them until my dying day. So as they go out on their own, I'm available as support to them. And that's kind of how it feels really good to me, to make it small, intimate, and to be this lineage of midwives. Yeah.
That is really beautiful. And this is
thanks, Crystal.
And my question, because I'm sure there are people listening that are wondering, as we said, you personally do have some other intuitive gifts. Is that a prerequisite for your death midwifery program?
I'm so glad you asked that. I'm really glad you asked that. No. No. What is a prerequisite is that they have some relationship with spirit. I don't care what it is. Mm-hmm. It's that they have some relationship with spirit. Because if they don't, and then I'm not the teacher or the trainer for them. Because right. we're gonna be talking about altars and death angels and that kind of thing. But the prerequisites are that you have a relationship with spirit in whatever that way is for you, whatever you want to call it, however it looks. And also that you know that you can hold space. You know that you can empty yourself and you hold space. And then I told a lie. There's three. The third one is that you're called. That you hear the calling.
Right.
However you hear it, you hear the calling to step in with the death angels and work with them.
That is, again, just so beautiful. And I just love the way you approach death and the beauty and the joy that you bring to this work and that you bring to people at a time when they are scared, when they're sad, when they're upset, and that you're able to transmute all of that energy into this peaceful, calm, like I love that image of this death nursery and of making this time, these final moments, beautiful, peaceful. It's just so soothing. It really, yes. really is.
Yeah.
So where can people find you, Narinder?
I'm a avid social media user. So on Instagram, I have two professional accounts. I have Narinder Basin Death Midwifery. And then I have my other account is called My Two Crows, like the birds. And you can just Google search Narinder Basin Death Midwifery. Try to keep it super simple. People can find me there.
Will also have the links to all of your locations in the show notes for this episode. So all you have to do is click and connect with Narinder and the amazing work that she is doing.
Thank you, Crystal. This has been an easy podcast.
Good. I'm glad. This was great. Again, I think this is so important. I love the work that you do, and I just want to share.
Thank you. Thank you for getting it out there. Thank you for the platform, and thank you for your calm energy as well. So, yeah.
Thank you.
All right. If you are a regular listener, then you know what time it is. It is time for Ask Chris. Ask Chris is that segment of the show where I use tarot to answer a listener question. And this week's question is from Eliza. Eliza says that there is a spirit or entity that she senses lingering in her house, and she wants to know what it wants. Eliza, the card I pulled for you is the Eight of Swords reversed. The Eight of Swords really speaks to an energy of being or feeling trapped. And I think feeling is really a better description for the energy of the Eight of Swords, because there is a way out if the figure in the card chooses to find it. So if this figure taps into her intuition, if she follows her instincts, she will realize that there is a puddle of water beneath her feet that will lead her out of what seems to be a cage. So whatever this entity is that you are sensing that is kind of lingering, maybe feeling like it is trapped somehow. And really what that says is that there's some sort of energy, some sort of heaviness, denseness, and shadows that may be connecting or tying this entity to this world, right? It hasn't fully crossed over or accepted that it is no longer in this world, and it's kind of just hanging around, lingering, and really just still kind of stuck, like one foot in this world, one foot in the other. So there are some things that you can do to get rid of this entity, get rid of this presence, if that is what you are looking to do. And really it all comes down to setting the intention for whatever this is to leave. So as I always recommend with any spiritual work, particularly work of this nature where you are dealing with energies, beings outside of yourself, is to first be very grounded and clear in what it is you are trying to do. All right, so you want to make sure that you are calm, that you are in a place that is quiet, that you have really set the intention to center yourself mentally, physically, and spiritually. And then you want to ask for help from God, Goddess, your spirit guides, your ancestors. Really call your whole team in, right? And ask them to help you release whatever this thing is. So you want to call on the energy of the help, the protection, the guidance of your spirit team, and let this thing know, let this entity know that it is no longer welcome in your space. So calling in the assistance of your spirit team, telling this entity that it is not welcome, you do not want it in your space, and it has to go. If you like, you can, you know, let it know that, listen, you are no longer a part of this world. You are not supposed to be here. It is time for you to go. And that should alleviate any further issues, visitations, or whatever from whatever this being is. And I want to give a shout out to the woman who will be my guest next week on the podcast for helping me to answer this question and for giving me some action steps that you can take, Eliza, on getting rid of whatever this is. So this is a woman who has more experience with this sort of thing than I do. She is a psychic medium. And I am not going to drop her name yet, but make sure to tune in next week to find out who my very special guest is and to hear all about some of the things that she does with her gifts in psychic mediumship. Thank you all for joining me here today for this episode of the Life Aligned podcast. If you have not done so already, be sure to follow me on social media. I am on Facebook and Instagram at Life Aligned Podcast. I'm also over on Twitter at Life Aligned. So be sure to check me out on those pages, give me a follow so we can stay connected throughout the week. And if you ever have a question that you'd like me to answer here on Ask Chris, you can shoot me a DM to any of those locations, or you can email me at ask, that's A-S-K, Chris, C-R-Y-S, at lifealignedpodcast.com. Thanks again for joining me, and be sure to tune back in next Sunday for another episode of the Life Aligned Podcast. Bye.